I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Europe has been hit hard by coronavirus, with Italy and Spain bearing the brunt of its destructive and deadly force, at least so far. Like the United States, businesses have been forced to shutter their doors to contain the spread of the virus. And like the United States, governments have taken steps to protect workers and help save their economies. We asked Matt Apuzzo to join us. He's based in Brussels, has been covering the pandemic for the New York Times. And Matt, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to talk to you.
Is Europe still the epicenter of the outbreak?
Well, I mean, look, it's hard to argue that the United States is not the epicenter these days. But yes, Europe is for sure right in the middle of it. And we're hoping, we've seen some positive signs that some of the curves are bending, but this is still very much a lockdown continent.
Let's talk about Italy, which has been under lockdown for a couple of weeks now. How are we seeing some of the bending of the curve that public health officials are looking for?
Look, I mean, I think what you're hearing, whether it's in Italy or here in Belgium or elsewhere, is we're seeing positive signs, but please don't get carried away, because we have to let everything work. So you do see a sort of flattening of the curve, the log curve on total cases in Italy. And daily new cases, hopefully have peaked. But the word here in Europe is let's not get ahead of ourselves. Mm-hmm. Today, the Belgian government said, look, it seems like maybe we've plateaued, but the entire country is about to go out on its Easter break. People had vacations planned, and they're telling people, don't go to the beach, don't go to the country. stay home and keep staying inside.
Well, what are the scale? What we're, you know, I think every day this week in the United States has been kind of shocking to see the level of job losses. How about for Europe, and are there particular countries? I'm thinking of Italy, of course, but particular countries that have really borne the brunt of some of these job losses.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's going to be a devastating situation here in Europe, just like it is in the United States. What's been so fascinating here as an American abroad is just to see the kind of philosophical approaches, different approaches that different countries take to this. And you know, Germany in particular, which has this, you know, incredible economy and has, you know, a center-right government. So I mean, we're not talking about, you know, one of the the Nordic countries that have a reputation for being exceptionally generous. They have put in place systems that are designed to keep people from getting laid off and soften the blow for people who are laid off. And so I think the expectation is, when you look at the major economy that is Germany and to some degree France, the expectation here is that it won't be as bad in terms of the raw unemployment numbers. We'll certainly see.
Well, I remember during the recession of about 10 years ago, Germany tried to keep as many people, even if they weren't working per se, but at least employed, with the idea that once this is over, it'll be easier for us to get everyone back to work. Is that the philosophy today, do you think?
Yeah, well, so they have this program in Germany called Kurzarbeit. I'm not a German speaker, so apologies for the accent. But Kurzarbeit, what it is it's basically a program designed to, as you say, keep people on the job. So what's happened now is there's a huge slowdown, obviously, in the economy in Germany. And what the German government has basically said is, we're activating this pool, giant pool of money, and companies can get that money to pay their worker wages. So it gives them essentially the permission to send workers home without laying them off. And the idea is, and this is something that's kicked around a lot in Europe, is that it's better to keep workers on the payroll, even if the government is paying the payroll, than it is to have them laid off and create the uncertainty that comes with being unemployed. And that's uncertainty for employers, and that's uncertainty for employees. Because the thinking is if you have a short-term slowdown, even a short-term serious slowdown, then getting people back to work will be easier if they are still attached to their current employer. And so what they are saying is during the Great Recession, there were 1.4 million people in Germany who drew money, drew wages under Kurzarbeit. And they're saying that's going to be probably 2 million plus now. And so it's really significant. It's a really different way to think about what the role of the government is in a slowdown. Is it there to provide liquidity? Is the job of a government just to pump money into the economy? Is it to create jobs, or is it to say, well, look, you job creators, you businesses, you've already created the jobs. We'll keep you afloat as long as you keep paying your wages.
Well, let me ask you about one of those Scandinavian countries. I was reading about Denmark compensating employers up to 90% of their workers' salaries. I think other countries as well. I mean, and I think from an American perspective, that's a lot of money, I do believe.
Yes.
But also that's very different from what's being done here in the United States.
Yeah, and you can see some, and I know you're going to have guests on who are more steeped in the U.S. policy, but you can see some of the ideas at play in the U.S. policy, but nowhere near to the degree that we're seeing in parts of Western Europe. Just this idea that the government is going to step in and let the private sector pay their workers. But rather than just mail checks to the workers, we give it to the employers to continue to pay their salary. And so what you see in Denmark, 75% of salaried employees, 75% of salaried wages and up to 90% of basically hourly workers will have that wages will be covered by the government. And you know what it does? It really just removes a level of fear that that comes from the uncertainty. A lot of the workers I talked to in the United States, especially in the restaurant industry, they were just out of the job and completely unsure of what they were going to do. And if you're making a minimum wage in New York City, unemployment covers roughly 50% of your wages. So unemployment is 50% of minimum wage. And so here, the same restaurant workers in Europe were saying, like, all right, look, I'm going to take a hit. I'm going to take a loss, but I'm not going to be thrown out on the street. I'm not going to be able to make my rent payments. And so what that does, it takes away the cascading effect of fear and pain caused by losing your job.
I mean, it also shows what a generous safety net can do. But how, let's say this pandemic continues and the job losses continue, can countries in Europe, can they afford to do this for their businesses, for their employees, their workers?
Well, so that's the question, not just for Europe, but I mean, that's the question for the world, right? Can the United States, can they continue to kick out another stimulus bill if this continues for another three months. Europe obviously has a timeline on there that certain countries have said one month and then we'll review. Certain countries have said 3 months and then we'll review. But there's an understanding, I think, among all the governments that if the economy is just not functioning, that the government is going to have to step in and do something. And I think what you're seeing is just reflects a different philosophy about what the safety net is and what the obligation is. And I think it should not go unsaid that taxes in Europe are much higher.
Right.
But you also have a higher kind of trust in government. This idea that government is going to do for people with their tax money. There is obviously in Europe, you don't have to worry if you lose your job. Are you going to get strapped with medical bills and go bankrupt? You pay higher taxes here for that. And so that, I think, is right now people in Europe are saying glad for those higher taxes.
Absolutely. Will, though, Can Europe hold together? I mean, obviously, we know it's all part of the EU. There are more than 20 countries involved. Can they hold together under the stress of the pandemic?
Well, I mean, they're holding together under the umbrella of the EU. Right. I'm not sure that the pain of the pandemic is going to fray the European Union more than, frankly, it already has. I mean, the European Union is an experiment that basically says we are all united under this set of principles and guidelines and rules, but you all maintain your sovereignty. And it's built on this idea of free travel. And you're seeing now, I mean, there's no free travel in Europe. I mean, you can't leave the country. It's a challenge. But what the European Union leaders are saying is now more than ever, you can look to the sort of continent to organize science and take care of trade. And you don't have to worry that because the borders are closed, you're not going to be able to get your toilet paper delivered or your heating oil delivered because the EU and the borderless trade has taken care of that. So from a European Union standpoint, I think the EU would say we're as strong as we were before, though I think the sort of Eurosceptic view is maybe you weren't all that strong to begin with. But
oh, interesting.
So we'll certainly see.
Well, this pandemic has revealed fault lines all over the world. Just a couple minutes before we have to say goodbye, You mentioned scientists. You had an interesting article about seeing scientists around the world collaborating with each other. Well, not all governments are doing that.
Yeah, I mean, if you just looked at kind of the public statements, certainly coming out of China and the United States from politicians, you see a very, like, the U.S. will get this done. America has the best science, or China will get this done. China is not going to fall behind anybody in the race for a cure or race for a vaccine. But the truth is this pandemic has created a real historic moment in the history of mankind. I mean, really never in the history of mankind have so many scientists been collaborating at such a high level with such urgency on one topic and been able to communicate essentially in real time. So you are seeing just a massive sharing of data. I mean, the genomic sequences that have been shared on public servers, I mean, there have been hundreds. I haven't checked in a couple of days, but there are over 200 genome sequences of this virus have been shared. All of the sort of academic imperatives of, well, I got to keep this a secret because my tenure depends on me getting this published exclusively, are kind of out the window. We've talked to lab scientists who have spotted developments and then they're immediately on conference calls with people around the world. And this idea that one country is going to be the one to solve it is really been dismissed, I think, by the top scientists of the world.
Well, Matt Abuzzo, it's always good to end on a positive note, some cause for hope. Thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Anytime.
And he's New York Times' Matt Abuzzo joining us from Brussels. We'll be talking about America after this short break. Do stay with us. I'm Marty Mosk.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Wayne, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. According to this morning's news, the U.S. shed 701,000 jobs in March, adding to the miserable economic headlines this week. Yesterday's report that 6.6 million Americans applied for unemployment insurance last week was shocking, showing the extent of the economic destruction from coronavirus. The week before, more than 3 million Americans applied for those same benefits. The pandemic has forced many big and small businesses to close and let workers go. Part of the government's $2 trillion rescue package is to give a lifeline to workers and business owners affected by this public health crisis. Is that enough? Joining us is Heather Long. She's been covering the economic impact of the coronavirus for The Washington Post. And Heather, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's good to be here.
Nice to have you with us. And to our listeners, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. We're talking about the pandemic economy. We began with Europe, and now we're talking about the United States. And Heather, let's just take a moment to sort of take stock of the frankly shocking numbers that we learned this week, that in the month of March, 10 million Americans apply for unemployment insurance benefits.
It's really staggering when you think about it. In the worst months of the Great Recession, which many of us still remember over a decade ago, we would lose about 800,000 jobs. You know, we lost more than 10 times that amount in a single month. Basically, in the past 2 weeks, another way to think about it, in the past 2 weeks, we have wiped out nearly 5 years worth of job gains. So this is just, it's happening so fast. You know, people were literally working on Friday and laid off on Monday. And so there's just been no adjustment period. Obviously, we're doing this to our economy because we're trying to save lives, and we all believe that the health issues should be the top priority. But from the economic perspective, you know, what we are certainly in a recession. The recession started in March, and the big question now is whether we will enter some sort of depression, so something we really haven't seen since the 1930s. And that's how staggering and huge these numbers we're talking about are.
Help us understand a bit of the disconnect. What we got this morning was 701,000 job losses in March, and yet we're seeing obviously millions of people in March applying for unemployment insurance benefits. Help us understand why those numbers don't line up.
That's a great question. It's very simple to explain. The numbers reported today that say the unemployment rate is now 4.4% in the United States. So that's a big jump from 3.5 in February, but it still sounds pretty low.
Right.
And the reason is the Labor Department does the surveys and the data collection to come up with those numbers on March 12th. That might as well be a century ago. March 12th was before the president declared a national emergency, and it was before the mass layoffs really started on Monday, March 16th, because that was the day that President Trump said no more than 10 people should be gathered in any place in the United States. So that's when you started to see the restaurants close, the gyms close, the bakeries close. You know, you name it, things were shutting down on March 16th and 17th, and that's when you really begin to trigger these mass layoffs. So, frankly, people were surprised that today's report was as bad as it was.
Wow.
You know, that tells us that even before the national emergency was declared, you know, even back on March 12th, we were already seeing hundreds of thousands of layoffs in the economy.
Well, let's talk about the $1,200 that the Treasury Department, the government, the Congress, the White House has put together for people who are being hit hard by this pandemic. Obviously, it would apply to probably most Americans. How quickly can someone expect to see that in their bank account?
The good news is the Treasury and the IRS think that they can start getting this money out possibly next week. So the first direct deposits will go first, and those could potentially begin on April 9th. Originally, we thought they wouldn't begin till about April 17th, but there is a real effort to try to get this money moving. The first people who are going to get it are the people who have their direct deposit information on file with the Internal Revenue Service. That's about 60% of people who normally file taxes. All of those people won't get it right away. You know, the system can't handle that many millions of people getting it at once. So that usually it rolls out over a couple of days. But I would say within the next 3 weeks, if you have that direct deposit on file, you should get this money in your bank account. Then the government will begin to mail out physical checks for the people that they don't have that banking information on file for.
There are people in this, many people in this country who are unbanked in that they don't have a bank account. They will go to their, you know, local cash checking place in order to get to cash their paycheck. What happens to someone like that?
Well, the good news is, as long as the government has their address, their mailing address, they will send them a physical check in the mail. Obviously, it's not a good time to be going to the cash checking places,
no.
But some of them are still open. And hopefully most people have a cell phone and can do some of that transaction through their cell phone. Again, it's not ideal, but I think the government, they are trying to get this money out quickly. I will say that their IRS is planning to have some sort of website, web portal, where people can input their banking information. So if for some reason the IRS does not already have your direct deposit, there will be an opportunity to update that information. So I encourage listeners, if you're uncertain, if you're unclear, to keep an eye out for that IRS announcement so you can try to ensure that they have your latest mailing address or your latest bank information.
What's in that package that's going to be helpful to a small business owner? Let's say someone has a flower shop or a beauty parlor or a furniture store. What kind of support do they get out of this package?
That is so key. We want to keep these businesses going because otherwise there won't be many jobs left when we finally do try to reopen the economy. Small business employs about half the people in the country. And there is a lot of help in this bill. What's happening today, starting this morning, people are already applying. You can go to your community bank, to Bank of America, Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, whatever bank that you normally use, and you can apply for what's called an SBA, a Small Business Administration loan. They're doing two versions of it. One loan, you can get up to $10 million to cover both your expenses to pay workers as well as your rent. If you're a flower shop or whatever and you need to pay rent to a landlord, that money can also be used for that purpose. The good news is the government, it says they will actually forgive that loan, at least the portion of it that is used to pay workers. So they're really trying to encourage small businesses across America to take out these loans and to pay their workers. I would also like to make the point that a lot of people say to me, but I'm a hairdresser, I'm an independent business or I'm self-employed. You are also eligible for these loans. So they really want everyone to apply who has been impacted by the coronavirus.
Heather, you had an article today, and in that article you say maybe half of business owners have just enough money to cover their expenses for the next 2 weeks, correct?
Yeah, so many people make this point sometimes, why don't business owners or why didn't workers save up money when times were good? And I think that that's just a little bit ignorant about how the economy really works. If you're a small business owner, particularly in a low margin business, like you're running a small restaurant or a small bakery, you're not keeping 3-4 months worth of cash on hand. You just can't do that in that type of a business. And so that's where you see those stunning figures that only about half of small businesses have basically half a month of cash flow on hand. So that's why it's so critical that this money gets out, because there is concern that for both small businesses and laid off workers, yes, we have all this money coming to them, but if it doesn't get there on time, they will go bankrupt. They will default on their payments. Many are telling me, we've reported, that they didn't pay their April 1st rent payment because they didn't have the money. And so, we're starting to see these payment chains break down. But our real hope is that when I talk to small business owners, they're calling their landlord saying, look, I am applying for these loans. Can you please just give me a few more weeks to pay the rent or pay my supplier? And I'm hopeful everybody will do the right thing. Unfortunately, we probably will lose some businesses here.
Let me just reintroduce you. That's Heather Long, and she's been covering the economic impact of the coronavirus for The Washington Post. And you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can leave a comment on our Facebook page, and I will work you into our conversation. Joining us now is Brad Hawkins. He's the owner of Isaac's Garage, which is in Wilmington, Delaware. And Brad, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you.
You have a garage in Wilmington, Delaware. Are you able to be open for business?
Yes, actually, we're pretty lucky because we're lumped in to a pretty broad category that's transportation. So we can do repairs, sort of like bike shops are now allowed to be open too. The problem is, which you're hearing from probably everybody else, is none of our customers are allowed to go out or are they working in town. So even though we are open, we have no customers because nobody can go outside.
I'm assuming if you're helping out first responders, or there are people who are allowed to be on the road. Are they who your customers are these days?
Yeah, actually, in the past about 2 weeks, most of the people have been first responders. The Wilmington Police Department, obviously, they're there, and they need their vehicles worked on. Not their actually their personal vehicles, not the police vehicles, but
right.
And that's been been good, but that's obviously not enough to keep a business going, just a few cars here and there.
Do you have employees that you've had to furlough or lay off?
No, at this time I'm by myself. I did have a few employees. One was deployed in the Army, but if they were there, I definitely would have to either furlough or lay them off. There's just not enough income to even almost pay myself at this time.
Well, which leads to the obvious question, how long do you think you can stay afloat under these certain conditions that we're all living with?
Yeah, it's tough to say. I mean, hopefully, things go well. I'm probably good for a month or so without any drastic measures. But, I am looking into the loans that actually I just heard the previous person talking about.
Yep.
And but past that point, I'm not 100% sure.
And when you're working, do you keep you're able to keep a safe distance from your customers and also do your job?
Yeah, it's tough, though, because they bring in cars and who knows where they've been. Trying to take the precautions, wearing gloves in the cars, and actually I try to keep like a clean area, where I do the paperwork and so forth. And then gloves in the car and try not to touch the keys because there's so many things that you come in contact with the cars. That you just don't know.
Well, Brad, I really appreciate you calling into the show, and I wish you best of luck as well through these difficult times. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. That's Brad Hawkins, and he's owner of Isaac's Garage in Wilmington, Delaware. And again, you can join our conversation, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And Heather, that's one business person with a garage in Wilmington, Delaware. Multiply that across the country.
Exactly. And I think, as he pointed out, he's better off than most right now. I think my big fear is, first, we need to get this money out to these companies. We have to hope that this loan process does work and does work fast enough. As he was saying, a lot of business owners telling me the same thing. They can survive for about a month on this, but they're going to need that money by the end of April. The other thing that I worry a lot about, again, thinking about these smaller restaurants and smaller businesses, okay, they get this loan in April, mm-hmm. but they're not having a lot of money coming in probably for April, May, June, maybe longer than that. And so what I'm hearing a lot is companies are getting some sort of break, like their landlord will say, okay, you don't have to pay the rent right away, but you still have to pay me by the end of the year, by July or August. And it's not like when business suddenly reopens again or picks back up to normal in the summer, we hope, that people are going to be flush with money. And so I think there's this real concern that we have to try to avoid a wave of bankruptcies in April, but we also have to try to avoid it in the summer and the fall. And we have to really be careful that we don't let companies go belly up later on when all these bills come due.
No question about that. Here's an email from Bill who says, the 1920s saw an economic boom despite coming after the Spanish flu of 1918. Why would this be so different? And I've heard people say, there could be this sort of pent-up desire to spend money for those people that have it. But does a pandemic also create certain economic opportunities?
Well, there's no doubt it's created a big opportunity for hand sanitizers and for grocery stores.
You know, exactly. Who are hiring, right?
Yep. So there's no doubt about that. But I think the important point to make, there are clearly more losers than winners. And just speaking economically, not even about the health side, about what's going on. And look, there is no doubt that I certainly want to go get my hair cut as soon as things are safe and we can do this again. There's no doubt that there will be some pent-up demand. There will be some things like hairdressers and barbershops that bounce back pretty quickly. But, you know, even when you look at like a Goldman Sachs projection, we are clearly going to have a really rough April, May, and June, probably have a pretty rough, you know, August, September. There will be a bounce back, we hope, at the end of the year. But I think I keep this in mind. Even groups like the Goldman Sachs of the world only think by the end of the year we will have recouped about half the losses. So the economy, you know, by the end of the year has still, you know, there's going to still be a lot of people in the hole, a lot of people negative. And again, that big concern is, think about it this way, all these laid off workers, we're talking about 10 million people have lost their jobs already. That happened in 2 weeks. In past recessions, it takes months, it takes years to get all those people back into jobs again. So that's where that pain can extend for a long time. And that's what we're really trying to figure out, how we can prevent that.
We're almost out of time here, Heather, but I've read looking at a possibility unemployment rate of 20%. You quoted someone saying as much as 30%. Is 30%, does that put us in a depression?
It's certainly, we haven't seen that since the Great Depression. As a matter of fact, if we get unemployment over 11%, it will be the worst on record, well, at least since the Great Depression. So that sort of tells you the scale of what we're dealing with here and just how grave it is if we can't get most of those people back to work quickly.
Well, we have to end it there. Heather Long, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And she's been covering the coronavirus impact, the effect of the economic effect of the coronavirus crisis for the Washington Post. We've got another guest, our final guest, waiting in the wings, talking about how to apply for unemployment insurance benefits. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. The coronavirus knows no borders and has forced business closures and layoffs in just about every part of the country. There were 10 million claims for unemployment insurance in March, including 6.6 million last week, and that includes an estimated 400,000 claims in Pennsylvania. For many who have lost their jobs, especially if it's for the first time, filling out benefit forms can feel overwhelming. We asked Julia Simon Michelle to join us. She's senior attorney at Philadelphia Legal Assistance in their Employment Compensation Unit to walk us through this process. And Julia Simon Michelle, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Of course. Happy to be here. I know that this is a really stressful time for a lot of people interacting with the unemployment system for the first time.
Exactly. And I want to talk about all of that. Let me just make sure our listeners can join the conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times and leave us a comment on our Facebook page. I'm assuming, Julia, with all these claims, that state offices are just completely overwhelmed.
They are, and understandably so. The Department of Labor and Industry, which oversees the unemployment compensation system in Pennsylvania, has taken an all-hands-on-deck approach, but this is an unprecedented number of claims. And there are some things that people can do that I think will help the department be able to process claims more quickly.
And I would assume that would be using online services?
So one of those would be using online services. The other would be, I know it's hard, but to take a deep breath when it comes to wondering when you're going to receive things in the mail. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people are concerned that they haven't received PIN numbers, which they need to file their biweekly claims, or they haven't received notices about their benefits. The department is processing all of that They're putting updates on their Facebook page about when things should arrive in the mail. If we can avoid calling or emailing with questions asking what's happening with my claim, when is X going to happen, that will let the department spend that time and resources processing claims and getting things out.
So check their page and they will have information for you. Are these forms, are they complicated? Are they long?
So the initial application can be quite long depending on the reason for your separation for work. For the vast majority of people, they are putting down lack of work as their separation. If the business mm-hmm. they work for has closed due to the COVID-19 crisis, they've had a reduction in hours or they've been laid off or furloughed. But even when you put lack of work, it can be difficult to get through. And I know that sometimes people are struggling to do this on their phone. For instance, if they don't have access to a computer, when people normally go to a career link or a library to file applications online.
Who qualifies for this? And would it include people who are part-timers or gig workers or people that maybe have multiple jobs or just don't have the sort of more traditional non-gig job situations?
Of course. So in order to qualify for unemployment, the first level of eligibility is called financial eligibility. And so the department is looking at, in essence, whether you had W-2 wages in the last year and a half. And so a part-time worker could very well qualify if they had enough work history during that time. Gig workers and people who were classified as independent contractors, they won't see their wages show up in the system if they apply because they've been reported as 1099 earnings. For folks who are not financially eligible because they don't have sufficient work history or they were working and receiving earnings as a 1099, they should be eligible under the new federal program, Pandemic Unemployment Assistance. That has not yet been implemented in Pennsylvania. They are working out the system and the application process now. If you think that you will be eligible under that program, do not apply right now to regular unemployment and wait for instructions on that program.
And that's coming from that $2.2 trillion that's coming from Congress and the White House?
Yes, that was part of the recently passed CARES Act.
So I'm looking at Bonnie's email. She says the unemployment application for self-employed still hasn't been updated. The state says to wait for details and to not apply under the regular filing process. And you say, agreed, hold off until that money gets to the state.
Yes, until they set up the process for applying, don't go through the regular system.
Here's a comment from Karenina from our Facebook page. Can we talk about the impact on undocumented workers? They're not eligible for unemployment compensation, and people who share a household with an undocumented immigrant won't be receiving stimulus checks. Anything you want to say to that, Julia?
So the unemployment compensation system only provides benefits to individuals who have work authorization, and the federal extension programs have the same requirements. And so, unfortunately, undocumented workers will not be able to access the system. But I do believe that there are folks out there looking at different ways to provide support for people who are unable to access unemployment.
And how much, what is the range in terms of what someone might get for this compensation benefit?
So regular Pennsylvania unemployment compensation can range from $68 a week to $561 a week. Retroactive to March 29th until the end of July, people will also be able to receive the $600 bump from the new CARES Act that is often referred to as pandemic unemployment compensation. So in addition to whatever you qualify for your weekly benefit rate, you would get that plus $600 a week. For anyone who qualifies under the new Pandemic Unemployment Assistance Program, they would also get that $600 bump in addition to whatever they qualify for under that program.
And how soon can someone expect to get that money?
Again, that is currently in process by the department. They are working out the details. I do not believe that you're going to have to take any additional action to get that money. It should be automatic and retroactive.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. That's Julia Simon-Michel. She's senior attorney at Philadelphia Legal Assistance in their unemployment compensation unit. And we are getting some guidelines about how to apply for unemployment insurance benefits. And just to underscore the urgency here, 6.6 million Americans applied for these benefits last week, including something like 400,000 claims in Pennsylvania. And again, send us any questions or comments you might have. radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Julie, let me see if you can answer Diane's question. She says, if we apply for Paycheck Protection Program and can't open the business after 8 weeks, can we lay off our employees before June 30th and still get the loan forgiven? This is something I was talking with Heather about from the Washington Post. Do you have an answer for Diane?
The Paycheck Protection Fairness Program is aimed at employers, and we represent workers. And I unfortunately don't know the details of that program to provide an answer.
Fair enough, and I appreciate that honest kind of answer. I'm wondering for workers here, we're talking about 400,000 people who are part of the 6.6 million, 400,000 in Pennsylvania alone. I was reading that we are second behind California. As someone who has worked in this this part of the economy, why so many people in this state you think are in such dire straits?
First of all, I think it's owed in large part to the Department of Labor and Industry and to our legal aid and community organizations getting the word out very quickly about how to access unemployment and the different waiver programs that were instituted early on to help people get benefits. I also think that we have a very good unemployment system in Pennsylvania. People are familiar with it. We have one of the better benefits ranges here as opposed to other states, and so I'm very glad that people are turning to the system in their time of need. That is exactly what it is here for, and I would just ask, like I said before, for people to have a little bit of patience. I know it's really difficult, but things that you are expecting in the mail will come from unemployment. They just might be a little bit delayed, but they are working on processing all of those claims. Marty, as a comparison,
sure.
People should know that in 2016, the department had 980,000 initial claims for the entire year.
Wow.
I believe we've already had more than half of that filed since this public health crisis struck. So that gives people an idea of what the department is dealing with.
But what you're also telling us is that while these numbers are shocking, it's a good thing because people are applying for the benefits to which they are entitled.
Absolutely. And we hope that people will continue to do that. I think what hopefully people understand is that once they file the initial application, they will get a PIN number in the mail, and then they will need to file biweekly claims. Those are also available to file online, and there's also an automated telephone number for those that's available on the unemployment compensation website. That telephone number is not affected by high-volume calls to the regular state number, so folks should still be able to access that to file their biweekly claims. If people have not received their PIN numbers, the department is being lenient and will help make sure that people do not miss weeks of benefits if they did not get their PIN number in time. So they're aware that people are struggling, and they're going to do their best to help as many people as possible.
What if a workplace is actually open or technically open, but worker either doesn't feel comfortable being there or is frankly going by the guidelines to stay home? Does that create a problem in applying for these benefits?
In Pennsylvania, you can qualify for unemployment compensation if you voluntarily leave your job, either by taking a leave of absence or quitting. Mm-hmm. But the burden is on you as a worker in that situation to establish you had a good cause to leave and that you made an effort to preserve your employment. So workers need to make sure to be engaging with their employer about their concerns and giving the employer an opportunity to address them to see if they can make the workplace safe for people who fear for their health, but certainly if you are high risk or live with a family member or household member who is high risk and you've informed your employer of that and don't feel comfortable going into work because of it, then you should be able to apply for unemployment if you're not working during this time, and you should be eligible.
Diane wants has a question for you, a follow-up to something you said earlier. She says, will everyone who qualifies for unemployment receive the additional $600 payment regardless of the amount of unemployment they get, part-time employees as well as full-time, she asks?
Yes, as long as you qualify for benefits in a given week, regardless of what your weekly benefit amount is from unemployment, our understanding, again, we are still waiting on more guidance from both the state and federal government, but our understanding is, yes, everyone should get that $600 bump.
Here's an email from Ella who says, my employer is a small retail business of non-life-sustaining goods, and our owner has asked us to continue working without being open to walk-in customers. Is it, quote-unquote, against the rules for us to be working at all? I don't want to have you answer something you might not know the answer to, but anything you can say back to Ella?
Well, under the governor's order, non-essential businesses should be closed unless they are able to work remotely. So if folks are being required to go in person and not practice social distancing, that is certainly a concern. Again, that should be raised with employers and expressly stated that the worker believes that this is in violation of the order. In addition, we have a stay-at-home order. If you've raised this with your employer and they have not provided an accommodation or a form of remote work, then again, I recommend applying for unemployment.
And once you apply to unemployment, do you have to show that you are continuing to look for work?
So under the normal system, there are work search requirements. And of course, we suggest people to continue to look for different work, especially remote work opportunities that might be popping up. But because of the COVID-19 crisis, the Department of Labor and Industry has waived the weekly work search requirements that are typical under the law, and they have also waived the requirement to register online with CareerLink, which is the job search website.
And is everything coronavirus-related when it comes to these benefits? Is that how we should be thinking?
So some people are still losing jobs for other reasons that are not COVID-19. And as long as there are reasons that you believe qualify for unemployment, you should definitely be applying. But certainly a lot of what we're seeing right now and a lot of the changes to the system are meant to protect workers. During the public health crisis, we recognize that employers are often not hiring right now, that it can be dangerous for people to go out and look for work given the stay-at-home order. And so the department has waived requirements based on all of that.
And what if you're denied these benefits? What's the appeals process?
If you are denied benefits, then you can appeal following the instructions that are on the back of the determination. You will receive in the mail. You will receive all decisions in the mail. So make sure that you check your mail constantly. You've provided an accurate mailing address to unemployment. You can appeal by email. You can appeal by fax. And if you are struggling and need help with that appeal, you may also qualify for Philadelphia Legal Assistance's free representation and legal services. We support and help people with appeals and anyone who is struggling to get their benefits because they've been denied. So I recommend people looking for our intake. It's open 4 mornings a week. At 215-981-3800 from 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. We have remained open, functioning, taking cases since this started, and we are proud to support the Philadelphia community.
Well, Julia, Simon, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Of course, and Marty, if I could also just quickly plug, we've also opened a service to help people who have been unable to file their claims online.
You know what? I hate to do this. We'll get that onto our Facebook page. Hold on, Debbie Builder will get you, and we'll put that information out there. We have to end our show. Julia Simon Michelle, senior attorney at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Aarons, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.